From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made about 2 weeks ago at the National Prayer Breakfast. President Obama addressed the gathering and he made what he thought would be some rather innocuous, obvious observations about history. The president was condemning the violence perpetrated in the name of religion by the so-called Islamic State, and he urged Westerners not to get on our high horse either regarding violence in the name of religion. You're going to hear his remarks coming up. Now, it turns out not everyone agrees with his assessment of history. Religious conservative leaders swiftly condemned the president's remarks. They argued that the Crusades were essentially a defensive war fought in retaliation against Muslim aggression. And that has pushed many of us to ask, wait a minute, what exactly were the Crusades all about? Was the president wrong? What should we know about the Crusades and the Inquisition? Fortunately, we've got a rich base of knowledge here in the Rochester Finger Lakes region, and my guests for the hour in studio here, Laura Smoller, is a University of Rochester history professor. Professor Smoller, nice to have you.
Thank you.
Tim Thibodeau is here, a Nazareth College professor of history. Timothy, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also, joining us from our WEOS studios in Geneva, Michael Tinkler and Courtney Wells are both here, Hobart and William Smith professors. Mr. Tinkler, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Wells, thank you as well.
Thank you.
All right, good to hear you both, and nice to have our panel here. I want to start by, before we go anywhere else here, let's go ahead and listen to exactly what the president said, his remarks from the National Prayer Breakfast that sparked all of this conversation. Here's President Barack Obama talking about the comparisons of history.
Those who seek to hijack religious for their own murderous ends. Humanity has been grappling with these questions throughout human history. And lest we get on our high horse and think this is unique to some other place, remember that during the Crusades and the Inquisition, people committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ.
Okay, and I have not asked our panel to adjudicate a political debate here. That's not the purpose. I think this is a good opening for learning. but that sparked my interest here. Not only the president's remarks, but some of the backlash. I want to read some of the comments that have come in response, and then we'll open up the conversation for our professors to help us wade through some of the misunderstandings here. First, here's former presidential candidate Rick Santorum. Quote, the idea that the Crusades and fight of Christendom against Islam is somehow an aggression on our part is absolutely anti-historical. And that is what the perception is by the American left, who hates Christianity, they hate Christendom, they hate Western civilization at the core. That's the problem. End quote. Here's Bobby Jindal, Louisiana governor. Quote, the Crusades happened so long ago as to be irrelevant in all modern contexts. End quote. Here's Catholic League President Bill Donahue. Quote, all the Crusades met the criteria of just wars. The Crusades were a defensive Christian reaction against Muslim madmen. End quote. Here's Ross Douthat in the New York Times. Quote, we are under no obligation to reject and disavow the entire multi-century struggle with an armed and equally militant foe as merely the manifestation of some irrational religious phobia, let alone accede to analogies that cast an entire civilization's worth of kings and theologians and soldiers as the moral equivalent of Osama bin Laden. End quote. All right, so that's just a sampling. Here's Jay Michelson responding. Here's the backlash to the backlash, which sometimes happens. In the Daily Beast, Jay Michelson wrote this, quote, most historians tend to agree that the Crusades were a dark chapter in Christian history, with extraordinary violence carried out in Christ's name and with Christian doctrine often a mere excuse for murder and pillage. This, no doubt, is why President Obama mentioned the Crusades as an example of heinous religious violence. It would seem to be an uncontroversial claim. Historians estimate that between 1 in 3 million people died in the Crusades, including the Crusaders, at a time when the world's population was only 300 million. The right-wing nut controversy following Obama's remarks, however, has laid bare a troubling trend among conservative Christians and the politicians eager to pander to them. They are now in the business of justifying the Crusades. End quote. Okay. Timothy Thibodeau, I did not ask you to come on here and tell me who's right, who's wrong. But at the same time, I think that we have to discuss some of the confusion here. First of all, the president's remarks. Too simplistic? Uncontroversial to you? Controversial?
Well, my first reaction is I think it's unfortunate that he morphed or lumped together several different things. One would be the Crusades. Depending on how you count them, there's anywhere between 4, 5, or 6 Crusades. and then the Inquisition. And of course, there's no such thing as the Inquisition. There was the Roman Inquisition, which was called the Holy Office of the Roman Inquisition to persecute heretics. There was the Spanish Inquisition of the 15th and 16th century, which was a government agency that was run by the King of Spain. So, you know, it's not the best history lesson. On the other hand, nothing he said is factually wrong in the sense that atrocities were committed by crusading armies. There was this abuse of human rights, if you want to look at it that way. I think I'm also not happy that politicians jump into this historical debate. These are terribly complicated historical events with an overlay of politics, of culture, of history, of religiosity. And to have this, as you said, adjudicated by the media or by political figures that are running for high office or maintaining office and playing, quote unquote, to their base is not the right way to go. My final remark here as a kind of opening statement is the faculty that you're interviewing today, this is what we do for a living. In a college classroom, we look at all sides of an argument. And we have to get into the thought process of people that are, quote unquote, on the other side, be sympathetic to their viewpoint. We are not, however, elected officials that are entrusted with defending a sovereign nation state or helping to end the violence that's taking place in different parts of the world. And I'm also struck by the fact that he used the term high horse or making moral judgments. During the 20th century, millions of people were killed by totalitarian regimes in warfare. And I find it interesting that at the height of World War II, Adolf Hitler, and according to one of his best biographers, an English historian named Ian Kershaw, made remarks about the extermination of the Jews by comparing it to the dislocation and extermination of Native Americans. So the interesting thing there, I can't imagine President Roosevelt or an American president or public figure saying, we can't judge this regime because we did some bad stuff in our own history. So it's morally very complicated for a public figure who has a different task than I have as a historian.
And Professor Thibodeau, you notice I didn't call any politicians to be on this panel for exactly the reasons that you stated.
Well, thank you.
For exactly the reasons that you stated. Professor Smoller, when it comes to the notion of the complexity of these matters, I would never seek to infer what the president might say hearing Professor Thibodeau, for example, but I suspect a lot of the response supporting the president's remarks would say, absolutely, complex wars, multi-century struggles, we tend to oversimplify, but at the same time, he's simply trying to say, we've been killing in the name of religion for far too long to act like it is anything new or that we have this high ground that has never stained our own religion, etc. That seemed to be his remark. You agree with Professor Thibodeau? Where do you stand on that?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. First of all, what struck me immediately when this whole brouhaha opened up was that here is an example, once again, of what I always tell my students, of people using and abusing history. And I don't know, we do the same thing with other disciplines, but yes. Historical facts get so often pulled into political debates. When my students say, why should I study history? Why am I required to take a history class? I sometimes say, it's not the reason that you thought you heard in high school, right? That those who don't know history are condemned to repeat the mistakes of the past. It's that you need to be aware when somebody's bringing in one of these historical arguments. So my first amusement was, or my first observation in watching this whole thing unfold was that here's a whole bunch of people using history. Here's a great example of exactly what I tell my students they need to be worried about. Beyond that, my second reaction, this is strange and unique to me perhaps, but as a medieval historian, someone who spends a lot of time studying and teaching about the church and about religion in the Middle Ages, is I do react really strongly against oversimplifications. And I sometimes find myself almost not defending, but explaining that things were not as horrible sometimes as popular perception makes them out to be. So one of my reactions is that Obama's oversimplification in some ways helps to contribute to some of these misuses of history.
And then some of the reaction to his oversimplification does the same, or maybe
exactly.
even snowballs it, doesn't it?
Exactly. It's so easy to caricature the past, and particularly to caricature the Middle Ages. It's we've been doing it since the Protestants in the 16th century. We've been doing it since the Enlightenment. It's a very easy foil to compare ourselves against.
Professor Tinkler, I think we're alighting on the idea, first of all, and I think it sounds like just your reactions indicate that you agree that oversimplifying complex matters is not wise. Maybe the president and those who support his remarks are simply saying, hey, look, in the recent historical context, looking at these horrific atrocities being committed by ostensibly in the name of Islam and by the so-called Islamic State, that sometimes we hear, well, that's the religion of violence. And this was this oversimplified remark to say, history's got a long, long way to go before anybody declares themselves above anything. And I think it's just perilous to oversimplify, but would you, Professor Tinkler, if you were advising the president, would you have said, I know what you're trying to do here, but maybe not the best way to make a point?
Oh, certainly. I really dislike historical analogy by politicians because it is always clumsy. And of course, as Professor Spohler suggested, it often does demonize whole periods like the Middle Ages. And by the way, I'd blame it on Petrarch. But then I'm an early medievalist.
I'm going to jump in here.
I'm an early medievalist, so Dark Ages, back in my hand. One interesting reaction that I had while reading some of these other responses, the whole idea of 3 million people dying during the Crusades. Well, first, let's tighten up what you mean by the Crusades. It would be hard for 3 million people to have died of natural causes in the Holy Land in those days. And what we're dealing with there, of course, are those crazy descriptions of blood running up to the thighs of mounted men in the sack of Jerusalem. Come on. That just didn't happen. You're dealing with pre-modern numbers and pre-modern quantities, which are, of course, never reliable. I really think that one has to tread carefully with that. Of course, part of the problem is that Obama was playing into the difficulty of, the idea of the religion of war, the religion of peace, the idea of progress, and in the Enlightenment world, another argument that people make that makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up, is what Islam needs is a reformation. Please, let's unpack that one. Looking at this as something that we Christianity, Christendom has gotten past this, and that Islam is still trapped in this cycle of violence. That's a deeply uninformed, not a deeply uninformed, that's a bad way of putting it, a terribly uninformed way of thinking about the world.
Professor Wells, opening remarks from you, and I think we've covered a good amount of ground here, but would you agree with the panel so far that even if it's well-intentioned, the president sort of stepped in this one?
I sure do. I really do. I think that what we're talking about is we're talking about a range of phenomena that are connected in ways that don't make it possible to simply say, well, this is what was done during the Crusades. So many of the Crusades, for example, were internal to the West as well as external to it. The analogy that was trying to be made, right, was Western judgments on the East because of what the West has done in the past in the East. I think that taking a closer look at what we term as the Crusades in the plural, I think it's a far more complicated history than that. One point that I did want to make that I was a little surprised by was, if I heard these comments right, were the comments of Rick Santorum that was basically implying that the president was trying to say that ISIS was in some way, shape, or form created indirectly by what happened by the Crusades. I think that is a pretty far stretch as far as an interpretation of the president's words went. I think we do all agree that there was an oversimplification there and that there's that by all means one has to be more careful in making an analogy with the past. And yet at the same time, I think what Mr. Santorum is reading into the whole debate as this implication that what happened in 1096, for example, in the Near East, that the president was trying to imply that had a hand in creating ISIS. I really think that is a little bit too far of a stretch.
Sure, and I think in so many ways every comment I've read is kind of an oversimplification. But here's Bobby Jindal making the point that the Crusades happened so long ago as to be irrelevant in all modern contexts. It's interesting. Professor Smoller, for example, you recoil at some of these overdoing it on historical analogies. But I also think it's unfair to say just because it happened 1,000 years ago that we shouldn't look to understand its place in context. I understand the point. It was a different world, and it's easy to apply our world in ways that maybe lead us down the wrong road, but that doesn't mean that we can't at least look for understandings, occasionally historical parallels, right?
Oh, I agree. I mean, I don't want us not to try to understand the past. In fact, my corrective that I offer to my students is instead of bringing in or being misled by some of these oversimplified historical analogies that are made by politicians, if you actually try to seek to understand what happened in the past and to understand the past on its own terms, then you're not going to be so easily bamboozled. You're going to be able to put your hand up and say, wait a minute, you know, this is not a valid analogy or this is not a valid argument.
Well, let me grab our first phone call. I haven't even mentioned the phone number, and already the phones are ringing, so there must be interest in the subject. If you want to join the program, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I'm on Twitter at Evan Dawson if you want to join us there. We've got Professor Timothy Thibodeau from Nazareth College, Professor Laura Smoller from the University of Rochester, Professors Michael Tinkler and Courtney Wells from Hobart and William Smith, and our first call is Mark in Rochester. Go ahead, Mark.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
I am concerned with the oversimplification. He may have used an example that you don't agree with, but the fact that folks have used religion as a guise for doing evil acts, affecting. He could have done something more recent. He could have talked about the struggles in Ireland. He could have talked about the Ku Klux Klan that used religion as a guise for some of the things they did.
Dave, hold on 1 second.
I'm sorry.
And stay there because you make an important point, and I want to point out for our listeners as well. We're talking about the Crusades because that's what sparked a lot of this conversation. The president, right after the soundbite that you heard me use, mentioned Jim Crow, other much more modern institutions as well that have occasionally deployed religion as sort of a cover. And so you're right. I mean, and he indicated in his remarks that there are other examples as well. Go ahead.
Oh, no, and that was my only point, that you can debate about which of the Crusades and how they affected folks, but I just wanted to say that what he said was not wrong, and his point should be taken, and to call it a misuse of history, I think, diminishes the point that he was badly making.
Mark, thank you for the call. Professor Thibodeau?
Yeah, I would respond to that in a couple of ways. First off, as I said, you know, the preface to my remarks, there's nothing factually incorrect, even as simplified as it was, what President Obama said. Those are all factually true things, that religion, Christianity in particular, has been perverted to support racism and the Klan and a whole bunch of other causes. The problem, though, is that if you're looking at what's going on geopolitically and you're looking at the hot spots where, in effect, religious and cultural genocide, as some are calling it, is taking place in the name of this ISIS ideology, their own rhetoric is never referring to Jim Crow or, you know, civil rights abuses. They use the term crusade. They've even, as they beheaded 21 Coptic Christians in Libya a couple days ago, basically, they're saying the next stop is Rome, and so they are, you know, whether or not we want to understand that they are living 1,000 years ago or they're looking at the world through the prism of the 12th century, we have to look at their rhetoric. What rhetorical categories and choices are they making in presenting what they are doing as a clash of civilizations, a clash of cultures, a clash of religion. As a historian, I can say that, you know, as the other scholars here have said, it's much more complicated. There's a lot more finesse and nuance to the historical process. But I'm disturbed that the rhetoric and the ideology of ISIS or ISIL, whatever they want to call themselves, is hearkening back to a kind of metaphoric understanding in their world.
I think they want to simplify it. Best I can tell is that that simplification plays to their advantage. That we are it is a clash of religious wars. And this is where I think Mark in Rochester's phone call, he used the term guise of religion. You know, I try not to get too much inside people's heads, but I also think the best I can tell is many of the people in so-called ISIS, just as many of the people perhaps in Ireland or elsewhere, not all of them, but they think they are behaving in religious terms that are proper, I think. And that's what is disturbing and potentially dangerous. Professor Wells, what do you think?
Well, I think that I think that surely taking a look at the Crusades, there is definitely, I mean, what the Crusade is by definition is it's a holy war trying to either defend Christianity from internal or external foes, or recuperating some lost territory of Christendom. I think that if you look at the definition of the Crusades, that this is something that is backed by religious authority, and not just any religious authority, but by the authority of the Pope and Urban II in particular, when the Crusades were preached back in 1095 and at the end of the 11th century. However, I think that there is a big danger that comes with this hearkening back, right, in this oversimplification of terms. And I agree. I think that ISIL is not seeking to look at things in a complex manner. And I think that this gets back to Professor Smaller's point about the importance of not using history as necessarily as a lens to interpret what we're seeing through our eyes today, but actually seek to understand the complications and the complexity of events that clearly does not exist in the rhetoric of a group such as ISIS or ISIL. What we have is this clear us versus them mentality that I'm a scholar of literature, excuse me, that oftentimes we see even come out within the literature of the Middle Ages itself, right? Is taking a situation that's often much more complicated and making it a one about clear distinctions of us versus them, the West versus the East. I think, and I don't want to speak for all of the panelists here, I think this is so much of the interest in studying and in teaching history is not learning how we can view the present through it, but how we can see how every present moment in the past is one that is of immense complexity that has to absolutely be respected in order to make the right decisions.
Let me grab one more phone call before our break here, and this hour is starting to fly by. We have a number of online questions. I'm going to try to get to those as well with our panel. This is John in Webster. Go ahead, John.
Hello, Evan. Thank you very much.
Sure.
My comment is, I'm a retired philosopher. When the panel says that the president was oversimplifying things, I think what they're saying is oversimplifying what the president was saying.
We're getting very meta now, but go ahead.
We can't deny history, and religion was the cause of those crusades. And you mentioned Ireland. I lived in Ireland. I know what went on there during the Troubles. And religion was the cause, and it has been the cause for awful slaughter throughout history. We can't deny that. Anyone who tries to deny that is covering it up, and they have a reason for it. As the previous caller said about guise of religion, I don't think it's the guise of religion. Having lived among the Troubles and in the Troubles in Ireland, I know what went on there. I look at history as a philosopher, and I see these things as facts, and facts can't be denied. When we say we believe something, we're saying, in fact, that it's true. That's my statement. Simple as that. We can't stop people from thinking their way about religion. ISIS, I don't give a damn about those people, except it should be taken care of.
John, thanks for the call. Professor Smoller?
Thank you, John, for the interesting comments. I think my reaction is that I don't want to use the O word again, but perhaps oversimplifying, because when you say point blank, religion was the cause, I think with regard to thinking about the Crusades, then I think you have to ask the question, well, why were there not Crusades in the first century or the second century or the third century? So I think to point at a single cause, again, oversimplifies in a way that keeps us from understanding and from understanding what aspects of a parallel might in fact be useful for us to looking at the current situation. So I think the more useful question would be, what is the constellation of factors in 1095 that leads a pope to walk into a council called to reform the church and to proclaim an armed pilgrimage to Jerusalem? So I think that just saying religion is the cause doesn't help us so much to understand. I think that looking at the rhetoric on the side of the Crusaders or on the side of ISIS, ISIL, is a much more, this kind of deeper, more nuanced look in some ways is going to be more helpful for us to try to figure out the situation we're in, as well as to figure out the past.
Professor Tinkler, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree very much with Professor Smoller. And the question is not even just why did it take until 1095. It's that, there's the invasion, and by the way, if we want to make historical analogies and we want to say 1,000 years is not too long, well, let's take it back to 637, when Umar visits Jerusalem. The Muslim forces from Arabia did invade the Mediterranean world. That's really quite simple. It was an invasion about religion as far as, well, you can say it's about a lot of other different things, but it's got a very long context. Why there? And there was, of course, territorial pushback by the Byzantines immediately. But why was there no Western involvement until 1095? That religion doesn't pick up yet. Of course, I'd say in the same way about the troubles in Northern Ireland. Well, what about the settlements in Northern Ireland? Yes, it's about religion, but it's also about an introduced population from another place.
All right,
that's more complicated than just religion, too.
So it is. We've got just over 20 minutes to try to sift out the rest of the Crusades and solve the mysteries of history. I've got to get a 60-second break and more of your phone calls when we return. And a great question from Alex online just wants a short definition, and there is no short definition, but the best we can do in a short amount of time to define what the Crusades are. You just heard Professor Tinkler talk about some of the background and some of what led into the Crusades. And then, interestingly enough, even though there are religious conservatives who've attacked President Obama's remarks at the National Prayer Breakfast, there's been some internecine struggle in the religious conservatives who disagree about the cause of the Inquisitions or the Roman Inquisition. So let's go ahead and try to break some of that down. Short break and more with our panel next on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and we are talking about the Crusades, the Inquisitions, plural, or some of the mistakes we make in speaking broadly about history. Started with President Obama's comments at the National Prayer Breakfast that came under attack by some, especially in sort of Christian conservative circles who thought the president was maligning the Crusades with a misunderstanding of history. So our professors in studio, both here and in our WEOS studios in Geneva, are helping us sort through this. Timothy Thibodeau, Professor Thibodeau's from Nazareth College, professor of history. Laura Smoller, professor at the University of Rochester. And professors Michael Tinkler and Courtney Wells at Hobart and William Smith. We have a comment from Emma online who says, we've been talking about the Crusades, but what about the Inquisition? And again, there's that singular term. And I think Emma's remarks, I'm trying to shorten, essentially she's saying if the president wanted to make the remark that we have been killing in the name of Christianity too over the years, he could have just used the Inquisition. Well, it's interesting she said that. After the president's remarks, you had Bill Donahue, the president of the Catholic League, saying that the body count from the Inquisition, and again, we're going to have to define what we're talking about here, was only 1,394, only 1,394. Jonah Goldberg from National Review Online says there were different versions of the term Inquisition. Some are milder or more enlightened than others. And Eric Erickson, a conservative commentator formerly of CNN, says the Inquisition was a, quote, Catholic thing, so it shouldn't be used to lecture us Protestants. Bill Donahue fires back to say the Inquisition was just an abuse of religion by kings and the Catholic Church had nothing to do with it. So, all right, hold on. Professor Thibodeau, you are shaking your head to that last
one. I'm shaking my head.
Okay.
I think, you know, as I said at the beginning of the program, I would want to disentangle Inquisition from Crusade. They're really not related historically in a direct sense. Inquisition is just a term that is associated with the power that a bishop had. He could run an inquisition in his diocese in the Catholic Church in the Middle Ages, which the Pope had beginning in the 13th century. And then I mentioned the Spanish Inquisition, which is basically a government-run agency to root out converts to Christianity who had lapsed back into Judaism or, you know, some other religion. Donahue's wrong about that. That, you know, to say the Catholic Church had nothing to do with this, it was a political institution, is wrong. I think the context there was fascinating. Now that we live in a, you know, enlightened, democratic, representative societies where we have pluralism, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, Europe in the Middle Ages, from, you know, the year 1000, roughly the time of the Crusades, to the end of the Middle Ages, was a one-party system, and to think of it in political terms, you were either Roman Catholic or you were something else, and the something else had all kinds of legal restrictions. If you were Jewish, if you were Muslim, well, there's hardly any in Europe. So Inquisition was a way to root out dissidents. There was a huge problem with that in the south of France in the region called Provence, and some of your listeners may not know that at the beginning of the 13th century, there was actually a crusade called by Pope Innocent III against Christian dissidents who were called the Cathari or the Cathars or the Albigensians. It's known as the Albigensian Crusade. You could even argue, too, that during the Hundred Years' War, la Guerre de Cent Ans, as the French call it, you had people arguing holy war or just war, where you had two Christian sovereign nations, what is now France and what is now England, on the battlefield. And of course, that war, the Great Crusade in France, produced the Catholic saint known as Saint Joan of Arc. So I think Inquisition is a whole different matter, and I don't think anyone who's a historian looking back at that would say that that was a great chapter in the history of the Catholic Church.
In very simple terms, and we're going to get all of our professors on this, let me get to Professor Smoller. In simple terms, to Emma's point, is it okay to look at the Inquisitions as, if you're looking for a historical moment where we were occasionally persecuting, removing rights, or killing under the name of religion, Emma wants to know if that's something that is sort of in bounds to make that point.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes, it's
okay.
Well, I don't know. It's trying to, the aim, the explicit aim of someone conducting an inquisition, whether a bunch of Dominicans who were appointed inquisitors of heretical depravity by the Pope after 1231, or a bishop before that, was to detect heresy, to correct heresy, and to bring this person back within the fold of the Church. What I wanted to say is, and my goal in life is to make things more complex than people believe them to be. So what I wanted to say is that in some ways the things that in the popular imagination are the most horrible aspects of the Inquisition with two capital letters are things that were imported from Roman law. So the idea that a suspected heretic was tortured to elicit a confession if you couldn't find two eyewitnesses who were willing to testify against this person, that comes from Roman law, from a category in Roman law called infamy, of a crime that was so heinous that you sort of lost your normal legal rights. So in some ways, yes, an infringement on human rights perpetrated in the name of religion by officials appointed by the medieval Catholic Church. Some of the more heinous parts of Inquisition don't flow directly from the Church, but from the adoption of aspects of Roman law.
Professor Tinkler.
I was going to say that even Monty Python gets it right here when they say nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. There's more than one Inquisition. And really, it has nothing to do with warfare. An Inquisition is, in fact, a legal inquiry, whether it's conducted by Dominicans, by priests, or by royal officials. It's not at all the same as, for instance, a really wonderful phrase that Professor Smoller used, the armed pilgrimage. The idea that you have people traveling with weapons to do something in another place, whether it's inside continental Europe or whether it's at the eastern end of the Mediterranean. It's just a very different thing. I just don't see that they go together at all. And I'm kind of stymied by it. It's like, what? I don't need to address both of them.
Professor Wells?
Yeah, I agree. I think that, again, to pick up on Professor Smoller's comments that rendering things more complex and looking at them in a more global way, I think, is so incredibly important. To address a little bit the comment about religion and what religion is responsible for in the past, for what crimes it's responsible for, I think it's important to note that although, as I mentioned before in defining the Crusades as holy war, although that this was authorized by papal authority, it's completely inaccurate to say that the Catholic Church did not have any dissenting voices within it throughout much of the crusading venture, and to say that it wasn't something that had many different opinions competing on how to define things that go from the indulgences granted by the popes to just the venture itself of reconquering territories. Professor Thibodeau mentioned the Albigensian Crusade, and here we have something that amounts to a civil war scenario, right? Where, although it starts based on religious pretexts, ends up being a pretty good excuse for a power grab of land. And rather than having a notion of Western Christian versus Eastern Islamic clashes of civilization, what you end up actually having is you have you have northern Frenchmen invading the south, and in a town like Béziers, almost just annihilating most of the population of the town, and saying, kill them all and let God sort out who are his own. To get back to the Inquisition point, again, I agree with Professor Tinkler that again it is quite complex. Yes, we can talk about violations of human rights, and we can talk about religious pressure. I mean, thinking again about the south of France, this is my specialty, with the town of Montségur, where this was one of the final strongholds of the Cathar the perfects of the religion, where they were given the choice of either converting, and this, I should add, relates in a way to the Crusade with the pogroms against the Jews in the Rhineland, that they had the choice of either converting or they had a pyre already set up for them to be burnt, and 200 of these people ended up choosing not to abjure their faith. So can we talk about violence in talking about the Inquisition? Absolutely. Can we talk about an imposition of will and of a certain view of religion? Absolutely. But at the same time, these ideas need to be explored a little bit more, perhaps in a way that a prayer breakfast discourse wouldn't really allow one to.
Well, let me get back to the phone. Every phone line is lit up, and Kate in Greece wants to weigh in. Go ahead, Kate.
Hi, good afternoon. I have several points, so bear with me. Everybody keeps referring to these situations as more complex, but I think you're up against popular opinion or popular conception, which is a very much harder thing to try and change. You can't sit everybody down and stick them in a classroom and go through the academics. So, I mean, that's just the way it is. Secondly, I'm seem to be perceiving a damage control operation underlying all of this control. I'm not saying to the individuals in your studio, but it seems everybody's uncomfortable about talking about Christian missteps in history. They don't want to go back that far. They don't want to discuss it. But I will tell you, as my personal feeling, until certain organized religions come to terms with their past and some of their present indiscretions and atrocities, and I would refer people to, if you want to study something in a modern context, study the mission schools that were organized here in the United States and in Canada for the Native American culture, which were designed to deculture these people, not just take and give them religion. I, for one, will not go, am not interested in, I've studied for 50 years after I left the religion that I was raised in. I have, will not find anything in the three major religions, because as a woman, I don't ride in the back of the bus, okay? So we've got all these other issues, and at the same time, what I'm trying to say is there are issues within the functioning churches right now that are not resolved or not are being tried, not glazed over, but we're not bringing this out. And until this all comes out, there'll be healthier churches, there'll be healthier organizations, and you may attract more people back, not me ever, but other people, because I was very devout as a very young person and very disappointed as a 15-year-old. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Kate, thank you. Professor Thibodeau?
Yeah, my response, I don't think any of the faculty here, we're experts in various topics associated with this, are trying to diminish whatever happened in the past involving the Catholic Church, the Christian Church. It's not just the Catholic Church. There were, if you look at what happened in England during the reign of King Henry VIII, where you had, in a three-year period, the king shut down every monastery and convent in England between 1536 and 1539. He doubled his net income, and he also martyred a lot of people, including St. John Fisher, who was the Bishop of Rochester, England, and St. Thomas More, his Lord Chancellor, along with many monks who refused to leave. So I think everyone here, we fully understand. We're experts in this. We've read the literature. We've read the primary source literature. I think what the president tried to do is maybe impossible. He's trying to walk a very fine line where he's trying not to equate all of Islam with the barbarism and the atrocities that some of these people are committing, while at the same time recognizing that we don't have our own dirty laundry. As an academic exercise in a classroom where he might have 50 minutes to give a lecture, take questions from his students that's based on, you know, primary source document reading, that's one thing. But when you're an elected official, and as I said, his primary job right now is Commander-in-Chief of the United States in the face of some very difficult, no easy solution, no easy choices, geopolitical landscape. That's my reaction.
So you have sympathy for the effort, if not the execution.
Yeah, I'm not critical of him personally. I don't have an axe to grind with him. And as I think any of the scholars you're talking to here, what he said in very simplified form is factually true. It's the delivery and the rhetorical circumstance of being engaged in a global conflict with terrorism where, you know, we have people, as we are speaking in the studio, who are being ethnically cleansed, being arrested, incarcerated, murdered, and forced out of their homelands for religious reasons.
Let me try to get through as many calls as we can for the rest of the hour. Let's try to move quickly as best we can. Stephen in Rochester. Go ahead, Stephen.
Yes, I'd like to comment on the fact that it seems to me that if you look at any biblical or Quran, you'll find passages in either of them which are taken out of context today because there's things that are said and written that are not acceptable in civil society. And everybody has to realize that no matter what religion you belong to. And I can look at Leviticus, punishments for sin, going from chapter 20, going from verse 9 onward through there. It talks almost the same thing that people have been justifying in, say, for example, Islam, is ISIL and that for justification for what they're doing. But these things were written in ancient times, and because times have changed, these people need to realize that that type of behavior is not acceptable in civil society. Yeah, maybe back then the Crusades were something because of circumstances. Life was hard and different back then. I mean, people didn't even have indoor plumbing back then, and things were put under control under a certain manner because of that. But things have changed today, and that's where the problem is.
Steve, I got to jump in because we're going to run out of time. Thanks for the call, and let me piggyback on his comments, and I'll kick it over to our Hobart and William Smith professors. You heard Stephen's comment. Adam writes to us, and I'm trying to condense his comment, says, I appreciate the point that the Crusades were certainly complex hundreds of years leading up to the start of the Crusades near the end of the 11th century, all of the things that went into that, political fighting, property, lands, etc. The difference between the Crusades 1,000 years ago and what ISIS wants to be a crusade today is that, Adam said, best I can tell, this is about a true religious purity today versus much more complex situations 1,000 years ago. Professor Wells, what do you make of that?
I think that clearly within the interior of ISIS, with the rhetoric that they've been using, right, as all of us have said already today, is a clear simplification of the past. I think that the thought and the justification that went behind the Crusades was really quite developed and really quite complex, and there's an incredible amount of original source material that catalogs a lot of the philosophy that went behind it. I'll just go ahead and say that honestly, I do think, getting back to the original point I think that we began making in this panel of faculty members, is that yes, I do think that there is a big difference. Even if we see correspondences, if we see violence and religion and the conjugation of the two in looking at the Crusades and looking at the Inquisition and looking at ISIS and looking at race relations in the United States, I think that it is a fair thing to say that we do see a conjunction there. However, to say that the rhetoric of ISIS is the same rhetoric that was used during the Crusades, I think is just inaccurate.
Professor Tinkler,
I think I mainly agree with Court, and I really don't think I can amplify that much. I think that's really well put. That in fact, it's in large part what disturbs people who know a lot about phenomena like the Crusades is having to help people use them rhetorically responsibly. That's part of what we try to teach people is how to make good analogies, how to write well, how to think clearly, and that's part of the problem.
Last call, and we're going to be very brief here. John Rochester, make it quick. Go ahead.
Hey, Evan. I guess what I'm getting out of this is the Crusades were stimulated, I guess, to start their initial actions because of the invasion from the south by the Muslims. And the second part is Muhammad, who was the prophet for Islam, was a highway robber and a vicious individual, committed genocide, etc.
Okay, hold on a sec, John. We're going to run out of time, so let me stop you there before we go any farther. Let me hit the first point. Professor Smoller, you were kind of shaking your head there about John's point there.
Well, it's just that and this point was made earlier, that to see the Crusades as a response to an invasion, why, you know, in 1095 did Western Europeans wake up and say, oh my God, they're Muslims in Jerusalem. You know, they've been there since the middle of the 7th century. So I think it's, I mean, okay, I'll try not to use the word complex, but I think that's just something I wanted to step in.
And 30 seconds, Professor Thibodeau, go.
I just wanted to say the Byzantine emperor who called on the Pope to send an army over, this was not a holy war for the Byzantines. They were worried about losing territory. So clash of religion, clash of culture is an afterthought or construction of the Crusade historians of the Middle Ages.
Okay. As you can see in this hour, we've barely really scratched the surface, and I just kind of...
No one's mentioned William of Tyre.
I'm almost compelled to apologize to our professors. I would think in an hour that we could get through so much, but at the same time, I think we're seeing with our phone calls and the comments here that, you know, I'm not afraid to say it. We do oversimplify complex matters, and we shouldn't apologize for that. But at the same time, we can come back again and hit it another time. And Professor Thibodeau was joking when the hour started that his good friend Tim Neeland over at Nazareth is in at my studio all the time because politics is always on the table, but you only get the Crusades once in a while. I am going to make sure we keep circling back to this in more detail when we can, because there's tremendous interest, and I think there's tremendous importance in getting an eye on history, understanding what parallels are there, understanding that sometimes when we do oversimplify and what the meaning is. So I want to thank our panel. Professor Thibodeau, thank you for being here. Professor Smoller, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And Professors Tinkler and Wells down at our WEOS studios. Again, another day. I hope you'll come back and join us again.
Thank you very
much. It would be my pleasure. Thank you.
All right, short break. We're talking Harper Lee's next novel, the ethical implications of publishing it, the legal issues surrounding it, and what might be in it. Stay with us.